Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Yeah, we've been featuring a little Christmas music and Christmas music trivia today. We noticed Darlene Love's Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree hit number one. Brenda Lee. Yeah, I'm thinking of Darlene Love because I like her stuff too. But Brenda Lee's Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree hit number one on the Billboard charts. It's only the third time a Christmas song has done that. I wonder if Eric Zorn knows the three. He's a musical guy. Hey, Eric Zorn, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Good. Here's your question. You ready? Name the three Christmas songs that hit number one on the Billboard charts.
Well, All I Want for Christmas is You, right?
Mariah
and
Carey,
then Rockin' Around
one.
The Christmas Tree just hit it.
Number two. And there was one other that's been there for a while.
White Christmas is always extremely popular, and so is Blue Christmas. I'm going to go with Blue Christmas.
You're absolutely right.
Alvin!
Okay!
Wait, you couldn't be wronger. That's the other song to hit number one on the Billboard charts as a Christmas song.
We have done that song at Songs of Good Cheer at the Old Town School.
It's wonderful. I love it. I love it. You guys should sneak that in this year.
Yeah, that's when we had Maria McCullough on the cast before she moved to Arizona. Maria had that great high voice that she could pull off. She could do a plausible Alvin and the Chipmunks impersonation.
Hula hoop, we can. Anyway, yep, those are the three. I'm looking at a list.
Hey, maybe we should bring you on and you could do it next time. I think it sounds like you've got it going on there.
Nope. Time Out Chicago has the, is this Time Out Chicago? Timeout.com has the 65 greatest Christmas songs of all time. I won't read them all, but notably, number one, they have All I Want for Christmas is You, Mariah Carey, The Pogues, and Christy McCall's Fairy Tale of New York. I don't know if there's a little recency bias in that, but that's a good song. Last Christmas.
That's pretty grim, though, eh?
Well, yeah, that's not maybe a good reason to touch it, or maybe it is. Number three, Last Christmas by Wham!, number four, White Christmas, Bing Crosby. And number five, Christmas Baby Please Come Home by Darlene Love. When she performs that with David Letterman, I get all the Christmas cheer a person could ask for.
And all the fun we had last year. Pretty life on the tree.
You go watch that video. She's standing on Paul's piano. It is just it's a perfect Christmas scape, you know, black and white and red, snow falling, everybody jamming. It's just the holly jolliest thing you've ever seen.
So those, you are really in the spirit, John. I am impressed. I'm impressed.
What do you want to talk about, Ed Burke or something? What's wrong with talking about Christmas?
We're doing this year for the first time in 25 years. We've been doing Songs of Good Cheer at the Old Town School and starting this Thursday. And we're doing Holly Jolly Christmas. You know, they have a holly jolly Christmas, that song, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And we haven't done it. And I brought this to the show because I said, you know, we've never done this. And people were like, we haven't? And I said, no, because we don't keep track of what we do that carefully. And Steve Rosen does an incredible job with it. We did change one word. Instead of kiss her once for me under the mistletoe, we do them kiss them once for me. Because we're very correct. It sounds good.
You could have said him, her, you could have thrown all the pronouns in, but let's not be silly about that. So them, huh? Mm. Kiss them once for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, and also there's a little, kissing someone under the mistletoe, if they're waiting there for you is one thing, but to steal a kiss is not very 2023 anymore. So,
well, I think what you're supposed to do is get a form. You need a consent that they sign before the semester begins that said, should you be under the mistletoe, I have permission to give you a kiss.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Got to be correct these days.
Well, and, you know, safe and smart. By the way, Eric Zorn is the publisher of something called the Picayune Sentinel. It's a weekly newsletter with stuff like this, silly stuff and real stuff, and he'll email it to you if you just email him, ericzorn@gmail.com, or he'll let you subscribe, and if you pay a premium, you get the bonus stuff, too. It's a pretty good investment of your money in news. By the way, this is not something that you and Pete and I said we would talk about, but I just mentioned Ed Burke. We'll talk about this more on the Mincing Rascals podcast, which we'll record tomorrow, but I don't think you're going to be able to join us. What's your thought about Ed Burke and his revelations in court?
Well, as I said all along, there hasn't been this incredible smoking gun. There's been a lot of talk. And it's probably going to be enough to convict him. And I say that primarily because the U.S. government at the Dirksen Federal Courthouse almost never loses. They don't bring loser cases very often. I would say their conviction rate is somewhere in the high 90s.
Yeah.
So the idea that they're not ready and that they don't have the goods on Burke is pretty far-fetched. Like I say, there hasn't been this greasy quid pro quo that we're used to seeing in political corruption cases. But the fact that it's gone on so long and it's still going on, they're still telling stories, and I think they're painting a picture of him for the jury of someone who is fundamentally, allegedly corrupt. And so that's going to make it easier for them to convict. But again, it doesn't strike me as one of those really, really strong cases where, like, why did he even bother to plead not guilty? Which some of them you wonder, what's going on here? Why is this public official who is caught with, you know, money stuffed into his suit coat and clear evidence of corruption? Why is he pleading not guilty? That's not one of the cases. That's not the case here. This case is much more subtle, but. So it's been interesting to watch. I haven't been attending the trial, but I've certainly been reading all about it.
Yeah, I have too. And every time I see a picture of him, he looks so bedrazzled and behaggled and bespeckled. He just looks so distraught. And it's such a pathetic scene, particularly when his wife, the Supreme Court Justice, is with him, the former chief of Illinois Supreme Court. They just look so beat down. And I have no sympathy for him, because when you read, for instance, the account today of the trial testimony yesterday, and it was back to that Burger King, this 20-something kid has to fly up from, what was it, Texas, to see what do we have to do to make this alderman in Chicago happy so we can improve our restaurants. And here's the thing that is really starting to bother me about this. I'm with you, Eric. There's no smoking gun. We don't have a suitcase of money, and he used veiled language like tuna and stuff. But it is so anti-business. Here's a developer that wants to redevelop that $600 million project at the post office, or a guy that wants to pave his parking lot. And Burke just sticks himself between that and says, okay, where's my cut? Where's my take? Even if they don't know who he is, he has no skin in the game that he inserts himself. And until he's made happy, you don't get any progress on your parking lot or your development. If I were a businessman, I would be pulling my hair out if I ran into one of these aldermen who run the city or their wards like little kingdoms.
Well, this is where our friend Austin Berg on the Mincing Rascals podcast, and you and I would agree, which is that this city is sort of structured to enhance this kind of corruption. When you have aldermanic prerogative, and you have an alderman, you have a zoning committee chairman, a finance committee chairman, who is able to pull strings like that, you're asking for corruption. And it is a strong argument for restructuring the way things are done in Chicago, to put things like those kind of permits, take them out of the hands of the alderman, put them in the hands of a zoning commission, that it would be much less likely to be subject to those kind of petty corruption. But it is, in many ways, it's a structural problem that Chicago has. And I think, and Austin has written a book about it, and I find highly persuasive. I know you do too. You really think, like, well, what business of it? Well, you know, how could this possibly be happening? And it must be baffling. You're right, Tim. Yeah. The business people that it's all the permit structure, all the regulations that are put on business in Chicago that enhance corruption and that just have to go.
And maybe in an environment, if I may, Eric, when we all know we need to do everything we can to make business profitable and happy in Chicago. I know this happened previously, but it just, it makes the stink of this thing that much greater. All right, so we talked a little bit about corruption in Chicago and Christmas songs. Now let's talk about Dr. Pepper. You ready?
I'm ready, yeah.
Did you see this? The Big 12 championship game at halftime, two college students took to the field for the annual Dr. Pepper tuition giveaway challenge. Whichever contestant could get the most footballs inside a Dr. Pepper branded bin within a certain amount of time wins a $100,000 tuition scholarship. Two kids, Ryan Georgian from the University of Pennsylvania and Gavin White from Ohio State University, had each put 10 points on the board. The tie meant they would go into overtime. Georgian made a shot in the final seconds of the overtime period, forcing the sudden death round. Georgian came out on top in the school in the shootout, but some fans cried foul. A video review revealed that Georgian was given 6 points in the first round, one more than he should have been given credit for. Now they're going to give both kids a scholarship. But that's not what's bothering you, is it, Eric?
Well, it bothers me a little bit, because how can they be putting on a show like this at a halftime of a major event and not perform the basic ritual of counting the number of successful shots? It's crazy. But what really bothers me about this contest, and it's been going on for a long time, is that it's turned into a speed contest where, instead of passing the football the way a quarterback does into a target, and if anyone listening is not familiar with what this contest is, the contestants stand 5 yards away from essentially a giant Dr. Pepper can with a hole in it, big hole in it, and they try to get the football into the hole.
Yep.
And to do this, what they do is, instead of passing it like a quarterback does, they just grab balls out of the barrel that's next to them, and they chest pass them or shovel them toward the hole. It's not like a football play. Now, some people said, well, yeah, there's a shovel pass in football every once in a long, long while. Football is thrown overhand. And it used to be that Dr. Pepper ran this contest, and it was just best out of 10. And instead of shoveling it like a basketball, you threw it like a football. And at some point, they decided, well, instead of having it be best out of 10, we'll just let people shoot as many times as they want to sort of increase the frenzy of activity. And so it's not a football contest. It's like, as I said in the piece today, it's like if they had a contest to see who could drop kick a ball over a volleyball net or something. It's just unrelated to the sport. And so I think it should go back to the ritual of 10 throws, and whichever one gets the ball into the hole most often wins. And you can do that within 30 seconds, so it's not really slow. But anyway, the contest has bothered me for that reason. Another thing that's bothered me about this contest is that they conduct a tiebreaker event earlier in the day or the day before, so that when there is a tie in the regular contest, and then they do a quick overtime, a half-length overtime, mm-hmm. and if that's still tied, then they just go, "Oh, this guy won yesterday in the tiebreaker contest. He wins."
Wow,
and which is like so anticlimactic. This whole thing needs to be rethought. And I said today, and if they don't rethink this, then I'm going to continue not drinking Dr. Pepper.
That'll teach him. Eric, what are your thoughts about the migrant tent not now going up at Brighton Park?
Well, that's for anyone who just missed that news alert. It looks like the state has withdrawn support from the Brighton Park site because they haven't sufficiently satisfied themselves that it's safe. And it looks to me like the study has suggested that it is not a safe site for people to be living on. And the city can, Kessler said, the city can continue if it wants to, but this is a big black eye for Mayor Johnson and for the fact that he was putting a lot of stake into creating this tent city out there, and it looks like the state is now not going to help, and that means that the whole project, and you know, there's also the health issue that has really come to the fore, that the city can go ahead, but it's going to cost a lot more for the city, and it's also the health concerns have not been allayed. I think that they need to go back to square one. And I've said before, John, that I don't like this idea, but I think it may be the best of the bad ideas that we have for housing thousands of people who are going to need shelter during the winter on an immediate basis. We don't have the interior spaces, the apartments, the houses, the rec rooms and so on to house these people. And so they're going to have to go back and find something. And they got to do it quickly because the temperatures are dropping every day.
The migrants are lucky that it's not colder than it can be this time of year. Here it is December 5th, and we've really only had one few day long patch of really cold weather. We don't have any snow on the ground. Typically, it's worse than this. And I don't know what to do with these people either, except put them in giant tents and find a lot and don't ask the people. Well, you got to, I think you need to notify, but I'm not sure you need to ask the people where the tent's going to go, because if you ask, then they're going to have to put them on a flotilla on Lake Michigan, and maybe the fish will complain. Nobody wants these people in their backyard. We've got to put them somewhere. What do you make of the idea of dropping leaflets on the U.S.-Mexican border with images of snow in Chicago and the tents and police floors they were living on, and a message that says, if you come to Chicago, you'll have to pay for your own lodging? And there was a plan to actually, these were drafted in Spanish, to sprinkle from the air onto the people along the Rio Grande. What do you make of that idea, Eric?
The polar vortex flyers and so on. I mean, I think it's a good idea. I don't know for a fact how much choice some of these migrants are given when they're put on buses at the border, whether they're told where they're going, whether they're given a bunch of different options. Because clearly there are cities that want migrants more than Chicago does at this point. St. Louis wants people to come there.
Really? I didn't
see
that.
Has a slightly better climate than we do. but I don't think they have nearly the influx that we have had. I think it's a good idea because the stories that I've read in the newspapers, certainly, and seen on television have suggested that a lot of the migrants who are here are disappointed by the lack of opportunity that they thought they were going to get, the lack of a welcome that they got, and the fact that they are experiencing cold weather and difficult sleeping conditions that they weren't expecting. And you know, people who have headed back, and certainly the Tribune has reported on people who have gotten back on buses and headed south because it's not very hospitable up here. It's perfectly nice in August, but it gets down into the 20s in January and February, and that's nasty weather to sleep in a tent.
You got that right. It's Eric Zorn in the Picayune Sentinel. You'll see images of giant Dr. Pepper cans and people free throw shooting footballs into the hole when you go to his site, plus other important news and commentary. Email ericzorn@gmail.com and listen to him on the Mincing Rascals podcast. Okay, Mr. Z, is it this Sunday or next Sunday I'm going to see you at Songs of Good Cheer?
Don't forget, it's this Sunday. We're running Songs of Good Cheer. It's December 7th through 10th at the Old Town School of Folk Music. That's oldtownschool.org. Still a few tickets left for, I think, Thursday and Friday night show. I think the show with you is sold out, John, but that's Sunday. But
all right.
But it's always a fun time, and I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Have a holly jolly Christmas, and we'll talk to you soon.
Ho, ho.
That's easy.